This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Before we get into the details of the trial, can I ask you if you think this trial is worthy of global attention?
Oh, it is. This trial was the result of a series of protests by Islamic supremacists who, at one point, the number of the protesters was at least 500,000 protesters. It was on December the 2nd, 500,000. It was the largest ever protest ever held in Indonesia. It also showed the increasing strength, the increasing muscle of Islamist supremacists in Indonesia. So it is worth a global attention.
Andreas, you use the expression Islamist supremacist, which is interesting because often we use the word Islamic fundamentalists or militants. Why do you use the expression supremacist?
This term, Islam supremacist, was a term that was introduced by Yahya Stakuf, a Muslim scholar from the Nahdlatul Ulama. He basically argued that this Islam supremacist is a term wider and captures the intolerance and the superior feeling among these people. And he argued that it is a better term than radical Muslim or Muslim hardliner. Thus, I thought that it is compatible with the term white supremacist. So he used the term Islam supremacist.
Now, Andreas, are trials for blasphemy common? And do anti-blasphemy laws in Indonesia protect all religions or just Islam?
It's a very good question. The blasphemy law in Indonesia was introduced in January 1965 by President Sukarno. Of course, if we remember the 1965 massacre, Sukarno soon lost power because of the coup by General Suharto. But under General Suharto rule for 33 years, that blasphemy law was rarely used. Altogether, maybe only 60 cases. When he was in power between 1965 until 1966. This blasphemy law was used mostly by the administration of President Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono. In 10 years he was in power, between 2004 until 2014, there were at least 106 cases that went to trial. I mean, more than that just went to the police, but frozen by the police. The police said that there is not enough evidence the person committed blasphemy. Actually, the United Nations and also some Indonesian Muslim scholars, including the late Abdurrahman Wahid, call on the Indonesian government to revoke the blasphemy law. Why? Because according to the UN, this blasphemy law is very difficult to verify, and also it is very easy to be manipulated as a political tool. That is also the argument of some Muslim scholars in Indonesia in 2009, asking the government to revoke that blasphemy law. But the court did not listen. They fought for the law to be maintained. And this is what we are seeing, that there are more and more people being tried under the blasphemy law. And now we have a really big case. This is the biggest case ever against an individual in Indonesia.
Now, again, just quickly, is the blasphemy law, does it protect all religions or just Islam?
The blasphemy law in Indonesia protects six religions: Islam, Protestantism, Catholicism, Hinduism, Buddhism, and Confucianism.
Okay. Now, coming back to the specific trial of Ahok, it started on the 13th, I believe, and it was adjourned. It's starting now. We understand that the public prosecutor asked for the adjournment because of the defendant's memorandum of objections. How important are these objections? What exactly is Ahok's legal team objecting to?
They are trying to tell the court that, according to the blasphemy law, a person accused of committing blasphemy should have a warning first. He should be reprimanded first. In this case, legally, Ahok was not reprimanded. This case went so fast from the police to the attorney general, and only 3 days submitted to the court. And within a week, the court said there is a schedule for the opening of the trial. So the lawyers, Ahok lawyers, asked them to cancel this hearing because there is a procedure that was missing.
Now, coming back to the case, also the question is this really about blasphemy, or is it about the identity of the governor, who is both Christian and an ethnic Chinese? Weren't there objections to him when he became governor? That I think some quarters arguing that a non-Muslim could not, in fact, have this kind of leadership position over a Muslim population.
Many people believe that it is more about him being a Christian. Why? The Indonesian Ulama Council will issue a statement that it was blasphemy on two grounds. One is non-Muslims are not supposed, quote-unquote, to interfere in Islamic affairs. So meaning that because you are Christian, you are not supposed to talk about the Al-Maida first. And secondly, the word that Al-Maida first was being, quote-unquote, used was pejorative. You might know that the initial argument that Ahok used is that in local elections, don't you voters want to be fooled by politicians who use the Al-Maida article of the Quran in saying that Muslims should not choose a non-Muslim leader. So the word used, according to the ancient Ulama Council, was pejorative. Although Ahok's statement was talking about politicians who used the Quran for their political gain, but they said that word used was pejorative. Thus, it is more about the defendant being a Christian than it is about the interpretation of the Quran.
Now, what is the mood in Jakarta with this trial? Has it had an effect on the streets? Are we looking at, are people unhappy or anxious because of the trial?
Oh, yeah. There are opposing views of this trial. Of course, there are Islam supremacists who want Ahok to be jailed, but there are also a lot of Ahok defenders who want Ahok to be acquitted. And these two groups are big. There is a feeling of anger on both sides. There is a feeling of frustration, especially on the Ahok supporters camp. And many of them are Muslims, very serious Muslims, from Muhammadiyah, from Nahdlatul Ulama. But there are also fear, especially among minorities in Jakarta, in Indonesia. There are fears that this Al-Maida article is going to be used more and more to reject Christian leaders for public office in Jakarta. The pressure for non-Muslims not to run for office, they are afraid that it is going to be on the rise, not only in public sector, but also in private sector.
Finally, Andreas, we understand that the president, Joko Widodo, has said that he's not going to interfere in any way in the trial. And what you said about anger on both sides, I mean, is the trial going to appease anybody? Whether Ahok is found guilty or found not guilty, are we looking at a continued deepening of tensions in Indonesia?
Oh, it is. You might know that our opponent in this case is the son, the eldest son, of former President Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono. This is the same president who used blasphemy law to jail minority individuals. Our popularity is rebound now. He is still in the lead of survey. Well, survey is, we can always question its accuracy. But if Ahok is to win the election next February, at the same time he has to go to prison, you can imagine the possible clash that is going to appear out of this case. Of course, this case is much bigger than Ahok. This is the case where oligarchy in Indonesia between the President Jokowi government vis-a-vis versus the Yudhoyono clan plus the Suharto clan. The Suharto clan also support the young Yudhoyono to run for office. At the same time, we also have radical Islamist organizations like the Islam Defenders Fund, Hizbut Tahrir. They are also supporting the young Yudhoyono against Ahok in this election.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.